are pessimists. So kind of hopeful pessimism is important. We should be pessimists because the world is like it is, yeah? We see growing fascism from US to Russia, from Brazil to India, Sweden, Greece, everywhere. And so there is no space for being optimist, but we should be hopeful because we have to fight, yeah? Otherwise, there is no reason to leave. But the topic for today is resistance. For me, resistance that we are here, I myself as former undocumented traveler, refugee, asylum seeker, etc., that I'm sitting here is resistance, that many of you are here is resistance. We do not respect borders, and not respecting borders is an act of resistance, yeah? So we should keep doing that. We don't respect borders. Should remember that borders are fiction. Borders are fake. They are constructed by some people, yeah? So we should remember one very important part of resistance is to remember and remind each other that borders are fictions and they are made by some people who made money and power out of that. So if they are fictive, if they are social constructions, they can be remade, yeah? We can remade them. So this is very important to remember. Then I want to say, for me, it's very important to forge. Forgery is important. We should forge passport, we should forge our identity, we should forge our nationality, we should forge our gender, etc., etc., to again say, to show that other identities formed are also fictive, yeah? That I am Iranian or Swedish national citizenship, my citizenship is also fake, yeah? This is made by some people. I mean, it is not coming from God or it's not coming from nature, yeah? Some people made it, yeah? So in a sense, it's a fake, yeah? So we should forge. And if I want to tell you how many different identities I have had, lie. You know, sometimes I was half Afghan, half Iranian. Sometimes I was Iranian Jew. Sometimes I was, I don't remember. So many times I just lied about my identity. And I enjoy it very much, yeah? So we should fake, we should forge, we should lie. Because borders keep lying to us. Because borders are fictive. Resistance is important. And when during so-called refugee crisis, when through Balkan roof, many people, when they face closed borders, they start screaming, Infitah and Azadi. Infitah is Arabic word for openness, and Azadi is Persian word, and Dari word for freedom. And these words are used in Damascus, in Tehran, in Kabul, in Delhi, in political manifestations. So that was a very interesting moment to see how these resistance against closed borders, demanding open borders in Infitah or Azadi, freedom, is linked to social movements and political movements in the Middle East. That's also very important to link these different kinds of resistance, yeah? Resistance against closed borders is very much linked to the resistance against war and dictatorship. So, real resistance is not coming from university. If we look over search for academics to do something very interesting as resistance, that's wrong. No, real resistance comes from the street politics, yeah? Street politics, the street is the only place the state can listen to us. When you occupy streets, when you occupy this kind of place, then they start listening, sometimes, sometimes not, but they never listen to us as academic, as scholars. So street politics is important, but we should avoid all this academic, discussion of human rights, blah, 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 and never mention human rights anymore. Yeah. It's a trap. Okay. Just a few points more. We should remember that there are always laws and ethics higher than laws of a country. Ethics in a society. We should remember that today we, all of us, say slavery was wrong because it caused suffering for so many people. 100 years from now, many people look back at this year, this time, and say, how could they do that? How could they let people die every day on the borders? How could they let people die in detention centers? How could they let people be deported, etc., etc.? So 100 years from now, people look back and say borders were horrible, like a slavery we do today. So it's always important to historicize and try to put this situation we are in a larger time frame. The last point is any bordering practices is colonial practices. So any resistance against borders is part of all ongoing resistance against colonialism. So it's larger. What you do here is very important in historical terms, I mean, part of this decolonizing resistance against colonialism. So again, remember, any border practices is a colonial practice. I stop here and
okay, thank you. Hi, everyone. It's really a pleasure to be here and an honor. I feel a bit, for sure, I feel humbled to talk about resistance in a place like that as an academic. So, and I feel very squeezed talking after Shara. So I want to say that I'm talking mostly not as an academic. I'm talking as a concerned citizen. I think that I also am very disillusioned with, I think what Sharon just said is beautiful, and it's this kind of an energetic push to think about resistance as something hopeful, and I'm afraid I'm going to sound probably much more pessimistic, and it comes, again, as my background as a citizen, I'm an Israeli, I was born in Israel, and I was very much an activist when I was in Israel trying to fight as much as I could against the occupation, the colonial Zionist occupation, and we failed, and the very few, I mean, still many thousands, but in Israel quite a small minority, I think we have a successive line of failure. Some people might disagree, but the facts still talk about it and shows that Zionist colonialism in Israel is alive and kicking and improved and maybe better than ever. So it is kind of pessimism that, to what extent resistance can actually really change structures of oppression when they are in the magnitude that people are experiencing in Europe now when it comes to migration regimes. I'm probably on the skeptical side. But I'll try to say some things about how I see these structures of oppression happening and why maybe it is so difficult for people like us to fight them. So I think one thing that, especially in the migration oppressive regimes happen, is that to fight, to resist, you need to have a very clear idea of who is the enemy, right? You need to resist something, you need to resist someone. And I think when it comes to migration regimes, like the ones we see in Europe, but also in Australia, also in the United States, also in other places, they are dispersed. There is like not really like a unit or a political party that you can say, this is the enemy. If we manage to fight that thing, then things will look different. The oppressive migration regime is this kind of a monster with 100 heads, you know? You find them in the border, but you also find them inside the city. It can come as the place where when you go for a healthcare check, you know, that's where you're going to find the migration oppressive regime. It can be the school of your children. It can be a police random check in the street. It can be in the detention center. It can be at a point of forceful removal from a country, a return to a country that you never wanted to be in, Dublin 3, you name it. So, you know, we are really a bit at loss. Where do you fight if you want to fight oppressive migration? And then I think the other things that don't stand really on our side is that the people that do most of the fighting are the migrants. And there is, of course, to fight something as having the magnitude of these oppressive regimes that we do think and that we want to fight, at least some of us, for sure, in this room now, you need to build coalition. It will never be something that is achieved by a small group. And what I think is that most other groups in the societies we believe are not really aligned to that idea that we need to fight migration and oppressive regimes. So the question is, how do you generate coalitions? How do you bring more people into that idea that the kind of society that we have is not the kind of society that we want to have? And I think that's a huge challenge. And I think migrants are the ones who are doing the best job in it. The problem is that migrants don't have political rights in the society where we live. And I think that's one of the crucial things that inhibit change. So the people that are in the most marginal position, but that are arguably the ones who are doing the most work in resisting, are the ones who have the least voice in the society that we live in. And that means that people like me need to also be involved in order to do something that I think is inherently wrong, and that is to represent the other, you know, to the society, to be a mediator. But I think it's necessary, and I think we at least there should think about better coalitions in ways that that kind of representation to the rest of the society might work in a way that is more effective. There is the work of Spivak, you know, the post-colonial thinking of can the subaltern speak? Can people that are deeply marginalized in the society can actually have a voice? And I think this is one way to think creatively about what can, you know, how can you resist? How can you generate a voice that is not mediated by people who are more acceptable in the society that they live in? The other thing that I think is working not probably in our favor is that there is a huge co-option that is going on. So a lot of initiatives that were out there to try to fight and to generate resistance are very easily co-opted into the oppressive migration regime. I'll give one example from academia, which I think is one of the lousiest lectures when it comes to resistance. I think academics are really not the hope for coalitions or for fighting very hard migration regimes. But a very small group of us in the University of Amsterdam, like 5 years ago, decided to help a group of, to work together with a group of undocumented migrants in the city of Amsterdam, to bring them into the university, to basically not ask permission, but just to take some classes, some classrooms, and to offer courses that we put together, and actually together also with the migrants. We asked them what would you be interested to, you know, to learn about, and try to construct a course. The first year it worked quite well. The second year the university found out that we were doing it and came and said, of course, they didn't have the face to say that this is just not to be done. So they said, look, it's very fine what you try to do, but let's organize it. And meaning, let's organize it was like, we, the university, going to offer the course. We're going to offer it once a semester. We're going to offer it for 20 refugees. you know, and like that they completely sort of destroy the potential that what we try to do had. And at the same time they also made it impossible because now they surveilled the classroom. It was not anymore that easy to just take a classroom and bring migrants and say we are just going to teach together, you know. So co-option is something that I think we have to be also very alert to, because it happens all the time. Now, just to stay on academia, because I don't think I can offer anything much more novel than that in a critical sense, but I'm thinking, why does academia not doing better? You know, why we academics are not really more involved in general in this kind of resistance to migration regimes? And let me tell you what I think, and I think it's more symptomatic of the society in which we live. So I think that me and most of my colleagues in academia are pushed into a very neoliberalized sector. So academia itself is becoming a sector in which we are ourselves, the privileges we lose. Most of us have the feeling that we are really precarious. Most of us have to think that if we don't work enough, if we don't publish enough, if we don't do our research good enough and can demonstrate it, we will be out of job. And that leads us to think in a very calculative way about what we're doing. And it means that what we're doing, we have to think, is this research going to be, you know, leading to certain career opportunities? Is this going to lead to certain promotion in my university? Will I not lose my job if I do something else? And all these kind of thinking are not very helpful if I have to just think that, what do I want to do if I'm interested in the society in which I live? You know, if I just want to put my academic energy into studying what I think is the most relevant, the most acute, or one of the most acute things in the society where I live. And I truly believe that most of us in academia are concerned more with our own career, with our own lives, with our own well-being, than with the big issues in the society in which we live. And it comes from that sense of precarity. And I think that sense of precarity has to be seen as an achievement of the system, if you like. The same system that builds oppressive migration regimes is the system that increasingly makes, I think, all of us, also citizens, feel very insecure, feel very much a sense of anxiety and fear in their life. And this kind of sense of insecurity, like, will I ever do, you know, will I be able to raise my kids? I think they should be raised in a very good way, of course, is endemic in our societies. And that kind of fear and anxiety is the material which I think divides potential coalitions. Instead of seeing us as all subject to this very neoliberal, precarious, logic that leads to precarity, we are led to believe that actually my interest is very important, and perhaps only if I really secure my interest, I can maybe help someone else, you know? And I think that kind of achievement of neoliberalism is the same achievement that also brings oppressive migration regimes to be there. Because it's big business, because it's it really strengthens the state. Having big borders and having very weak enemy to fight is something that strengthens the state. And to create that kind of indifference, even in academic or supposedly critical people, you need to have that sense of anxiety to permit society, you know, to invade society much more pervasive, in a pervasive way, endemically. And I think this is what happens. And I think if we want to think constructively, we have to somehow help each other, you know, to move away from that kind of sense of anxiety and feel together a bit more confident in what we do. And then I will move into what Shaham was just saying in a much more confident way to say, sure, to resist, especially oppressive migration regimes as we are experiencing now, you need violence. I won't make it more beautiful than it is. I don't think that change will come by talking, you know, with a lot of rationality, explaining to policymakers and politicians that what they do is wrong. If they do something else, they want to look much better. I really don't believe the change will come like that. I think the change will come with applying violence where violence is being applied. But in order to do that, in order not to break down immediately when it happens, as again, if I draw back on my experience in Israel, is the case. And I think the very few that in Israel are still fighting occupation are really brave people, because they might be shot, and the regressive reactions of the states are just getting worse and worse, and they are still fighting, some of them. But again, I cannot generate optimism from there, because I don't see the big achievements that has been made. So I'm thinking that maybe, to be hopeful, if we manage to find a way to sort of give confidence to one another, that actually we can fight together, because we are actually all on the same side, I believe, that kind of oppressive regime that makes your life a horror, but also our life filled with anxiety, that would be one step in the right direction. Now, how to do this? I think a place like this is a great example, but it's one among the very few out there. So I just take a lot of inspiration myself from a place like that. I'll stop here.
Thank you very much, both of you. I believe that it was just an opening of the debate and discussion that we would like to have with a lot of people. There is a lot of residents, refugees by themselves also, who are living here in City Plaza. So please, let's participate, everyone. Let's talk, let's say opinions, and let's ask any question you have to ask today, and we can discuss. Just forget it to say at the beginning that parallel with the discussion we have this an amazing exhibition of Roman Rowley. I didn't know him before, but I checked a little bit in the internet and I saw the photos. So you can see after the talk, you have a look. It's really amazing, the work of years about migration also. So let's start the debate. Any question?
Thanks. My name is Claudio. I'm Italian because by chance I've been born in Italy. And I have a thought I want to share with you, and in form of question, maybe could be also a contribution to the discussion. And you were talking about coalition. How to get the idea that we are on the same side. My experience in Italy is that there is in the south of Italy, in the fields of Puglia, Calabria, there are plenty of hundreds of thousands of people working without rights, working in condition of very rude exploitation. So my question is, we observe also that going a bit in the specific of how the border regime function. You mentioned the hotspot. So the hotspot is an invention of a German minister in 2004. And it's the idea that the policy of the policy to divide, to split the migrants from the refugees, so the so-called economical migrants then from the refugees. I lived my last 10 years in Germany, then I have also experience of a system completely based on the idea of protection. Which is, in my opinion, I got to the point that is kind of part of a colonial heritage. There is a big disproportion of power between the one who is helping and between the one who is in need of protection. What I was suggesting isn't maybe the common point in which find a possibility of alliance to identify the exploitation as a common term, because actually criminalizing the people who are moving through the borders to find a job is actually the first step to make them invisible and to exploit them without the possibility of claim for any social and economical rights.
everybody. Thank you for coming. Thank you for doing this open conversation. My name is Mohsen Rezaei. I resident here. I would like to ask three questions, each question from each one of you guys, if you wouldn't mind. You said that a safe organization and also you use the word quiet. In the, I don't know, maybe it's silly to say, but the question is, do you really think fighting would be a proper solution? And in second, why, instead of having this open conversation with two people who are in one side, you don't have this open conversation with those people who are not in our side? Why you don't have this open conversation with those people who are not in our side? You do this open conversation right now, it's really lovely, but if you look at this people, all are in the same side. Yeah. And second one. He mentioned about the way of NGOs, the way NGOs treat with refugees. I would like to ask you how the City Plaza treat with people here. I would like you to make it more clear for other people. And third question from I forgot your name, sorry. Mark. Yeah. How is your experience for awareness? I mean, most awareness. How is your awareness about City Plaza? Have you ever spoken with refugees? Have you ever listened to them? Have you ever questioned them? Are they happy? Or just you listen to one side? I mean, your coordinators? You are telling that this project is a good project.
Should I? Yeah? Thank you for your question. I do speak with the other side very much. I do speak with the other side much more. I have meeting with the leading group of Swedish Migration Board 4 times a year. And in any other rooms and in other situations, I never let them pass easily. Even, you know, and it happens every week. Yeah? It happens every week. I have to fight back. Yeah, I have to fight back and say no. This is not. Right, this is not right. So to answer your question, actually I talk more with the people on the other side, people who are against us.
So I talk very often with refugees and in very different places. In Israel, for example, there are a lot of undocumented migrants and more than 200,000 among them many refugees. And for the first 10 years of where I was doing research, I was mainly doing research with refugees and undocumented migrants. And after 10 years of doing that, I actually got to the point that I thought it's much more important for at least people like me in academia to try to do research on someone else, not on the migrants and the refugees, but on the people that actually put migrants and refugees in the place where they are put in the society where I live. So basically, I started to study people that are like me, you know, the people who potentially work in this migration oppressive apparatus that makes the life of refugees and migrants in the society where I live look like they look. And I think that is actually one of the very few things that academics might be able to contribute to immigration apparatus. And that is to talk back with that kind of knowledge that we produce about how these regimes work back to the people that actually construct them and make them feel very uncomfortable about it and make them, if we are able, feel very ashamed about it. I think that is something that maybe we can do. And it's much more difficult. I enjoy much more talking with refugees and migrants. I'm myself a migrant. So that comes easy to me. The thing that doesn't come easy to me is to sit in an office of a deportation unit and talk with the people who will deport migrants and refugees. But I actually very consciously chose to do this because I think this is one of the very few things that that academic can actually do in the sense of resistance.
To answer also to the question, if I understood correctly, it's like I make a criticism of the NGO's way of doing dealing with refugees or what we do in City Plaza. To be honest, being 2.5 years here in City Plaza, fighting in or struggling or creating an example among a mess of the situation, like you cannot have City Plaza, an island of a bubble of, I don't know, totally different, because we are dealing with the outside world, and just going outside in Ahanon, you have another reality, and people, the residents here are between these two situations, here being active politically also, and in the daily life here, and then outside going, the same time looking behind smugglers how to leave from Greece. Is really difficult, and it's not difficult only for the refugees, but also for people who are active and participating in this project. And again, people who are coming, for example, from hotspots from Moria, and then they are coming in City Plaza, and then they have to get used that here is totally different. Sometimes you don't need only to get used to bad situation, but sometimes it's really difficult to accept also or to adjust also that there is a place that there is no all of the differences that you create. And I don't know if he's here, a very good friend of us from Pakistan, I don't want to say the name. When he came first here, for the first few months, every time we were treating him like all the other people, he was suspicious. Because he was not believing that there is no this categorizing, I'm not at the end of the line. And he was, it took a lot of times, he was very much reacting every time we were saying to his children, you have to take care, and telling to them that they should be calm, not fighting. And he was saying, why are you telling only to me? Because he was feeling this, because he was caring, and he was thinking that this is Europe, and everywhere you go, this is the situation. So we are dealing in a way with all the residents here, building a culture of negotiation, culture of talk, and discussion and debating. And we are using a lot of translation. And we are sitting hours and hours talking with people, because it's not automatically things are working here. Every day in City Plaza is a new day, and it finished at the end of the day, and you start the next day, another day, which is totally could be different. The small things can create a big trouble, and the big trouble can be solved in a more simple way. It's not easy, and we are trying to do as much as possible in a way that is fair for all of us. But without forgetting that we are not equal with them. We have, including me also, living more than 15 years in Greece, we have a lot of privileges. The point is to not misuse the privileges against the people that they don't have it. And the same time, dealing with myself, I was just going a few days ago to Germany, to Hamburg, to participate to this pirate anti-racist. I was checked by Frontex in Athens airport, and they were waiting me in Germany, checking me again. And they called my name in the megaphone in Athens airport and to go to the desk, and then I go and they says, do you speak English? And they says, yes, but it has to do with my travel. If I don't speak, so what does it mean? That's okay, you can go. Then I understood that behind the bar there was two German guys in Athens airport checking my passport. So this double situations that you mentioned also, it's we are trying to deal with all of these things at the same time. So we are living in Europe of really extremely going to far right in two different ways. It's like you have Salvini, you have the Hungarian, you have Austria, you have many other countries, and then you have Merkel and you have Macron, which they come as an example of, I don't know, pretend that they will be the one who will guarantee the democracy in Europe, and we founded the slavery in Libya and founding dictators in Turkey, or sending Afghans in a country that is 70% controlled by Taliban. So we are dealing with all of this situation, and this is all the people are carrying. Sorry for taking a lot of time. We have more questions and comments, please.
Hi, my name is Yolanda, and I'm from the U.S. I guess the theme of the theme of this panel is resistance, and I've heard it sort of described that this is a place of resistance, but I'm still struggling to understand what exactly or how it's a place of resistance. I know that there's broad sort of language used, but I guess I'd like to know more of the nitty-gritty examples of, for instance, how do people get here? How do they know the demographics? How many people live here? Are there families, men, women, children? And I guess within, can kids go to school? How does people help people here? And there's a lot of people here. If they are willing, right? It's how has living here changed their ability to either have more stability or more power within Greece, and what does that mean for them or for their future?
I heard that.
I guess
that.
Okay, I will try to be very brief because the topic of the talk is not today about the plaza, but of course I can tell some very few information about the space. Apart of all the other things that I have mentioned in the beginning, we are a place that we can house around maximum 400 people. For the first year we were 400, now we are 300, because after 2.5 years people needed a little bit more space. If in one room, for example, it was 3 people, now it's 2 people, because it's still, maybe it's the best comparing with all the places in Greece, but still it's a room of a hotel. So people need a little bit more place. I think how we receive people, it was always one of the most difficult part. It was one of the most challenging also, because the capacity is really limited. And then you have all the people who are living outside in the camps, or they are homeless, or they just arrived in the border, they needed a place. At the beginning we denied to have a waiting list, but then we had to do it because people were saying, okay, maybe this is sometimes actually create a hope. Maybe one day I will get to, and then it arrives in 4,000 or 5,000 people, waiting list, and we are trying to explain that does not mean that we will have the space, because the other difference of this place was that here you can stay as much you want. It was not temporary, it was not limited of time. So people could stay as much as they wanted, and there are people that they are 2.5 years with us. Very few families, but there are still people staying here. But what we were doing is to explain very, very, very clear and very honestly that this is our possibilities, what we can do. But also, first, being clear with ourselves that we don't come in City Plaza to solve the housing problem of the refugees. We can't do that. It was not possible. It is not possible. And we cannot pretend also that we do that. We come here to create a community, a housing project, a counterexample, to show in 3 directions that it's possible. To the government, that they have to do it. If they don't do it, it's because they choose to not do it. To the Greek people, to the society, saying, we can live together, and this is an example. And then to the movement that we can be creative also, we can do something that it's worth it. This was the idea behind of that. And then, of course, this is the only place also that I can mention it, that maybe the only place in all Greece that there are some people living with refugees here. And I lived 2.5 years together with some other people, very few people, but we live and experience these things also with residents. Because people need to be safe also at night. These places are targeted by the fascists also. This area, it was in the map from 2011 to 2013 especially, red zone. Not migrants could move around. Otherwise the Golden Dawn would kick with knives. And so to keep this place safe also we needed some people to stay here, and this was a really, really great and challenging experience. I don't want to say a lot, but on every Tuesday at 6 o'clock we have this introduction meeting with all the people who wants to know more about City Plaza. We speak about the background, about us, who we are, why we do this, and everyone who is in Athens could come or welcome. Or you can, after the meeting, come find us and talk about more about City Plaza. But, to not take it.
I just want to give an example from a very different context to an answer to your question. In Iran, country I come from, in 4 decades, Iranian women have been forced to be bathed. And every day, Iranian women manipulate their weight. Yeah, a little bit back, a little bit here, a little bit there to show more hair. Yeah? They didn't change anything. Yeah? They still, the law is there, the police is there, they have to be bathed. Yeah? But it doesn't mean that their resistance didn't anything. Yeah? Sometimes we are focusing on how resistance materializes, and we forget how resistance, as in case of Iranian women, create space or here, create a space for new imagination, new subjectivity, new political vision. And I think this is why I said we should forget human rights, humanitarian intervention. There are many some other organizations providing that kind of services, yeah? We should do something more, yeah? We should have a political vision instead of creating another camp, more services, a better tent, more food, etc. I don't think you are here for that.
The core group. I wanted also to say something on the last question, which also maybe has comes together with this question about humanitarianism, etc. So the City Plaza, as also Nassim mentioned at the beginning, started right after the EU-Turkey deal of the ceiling, the closure of the borders and the Aegean and the Balkan route. So until then, there was this huge solidarity movement in which humanitarian aid, what people were doing spontaneously, but also NGOs, big NGOs and international organizations were doing in the migration route, was helping supporting the very needs of the migrants in transit. The moment of the closure was exactly a moment that politically created a gap between what is the rights of refugees, what is the interests of the refugees themselves, the migrants in transit, and what's supposed to be humanitarian. And then we see a co-option and we see a way how humanitarianism, what the Greek government calls pragmatic humanitarianism, is expressed in a system of control, in a system of segregation, in a system of selecting, and of course for Greece to create a buffer zone for the rest of the Europe to undertake, like all the border countries. So I want to stress this point, and what City Plaza at this point wanted was exactly to act in a state of emergency, that it was to say that there is a way to express humanity, and this, in the new situation of closed borders, is to be politicized. And of course, to spot an empty hotel, it's not an easy thing, and it's something that would not be even thinkable 3 years before 2015, or 1 year before 2015. It is, we have to think also that resistance is also all this experience of the struggles and the different big movements in Greece. So there was kinds of mobilization, and which, through the summer of migration, through the solidarity movement of the migrants, brought such a radical practice. And City Plaza is not the only, not the first, but there is many more. City Plaza has some specific characteristics. One is self-organizing, it's very important. And self-organizing means not, because it happened many times, it's not spotting and say, self-organize yourself, we did it. So it is more organizing, it's much more. And this is the last what I want to say. It's that many times we say we are a community, we are a family. It's also in the relations at City Plaza is very often. Now that with some people we are for more than 1 year, everybody says we are a family. No, we are not a family. Of course, we are not a family, and we are not a community which we all decided to come with. So, for refugees coming here, the first thing is to be in a place of safety, in a place with some privacy, and it is maybe a place of rest in order to move further. And this is and two and a half years. It's more than 1,000 persons have passed from here. So for us, or for the local political groups and so on, it's a clear political action which has this civil disobedience thing. It is but it is something more. It is something that opened up a learning process that was not common. It is not just City Plaza, it is maybe the biggest and the more intense thing, or not only long, but something that puts the question in question all the time, how we act politically, and what does it mean to produce rights, to create spaces of safety, freedom, spaces that people can use, not always political, not always. But I think it's the very political of the changing in the everyday life, and this is together with demanding, together with putting specific demands on the state, somehow characterizes this project.
To remind that after the talk we have this family dinner, so everyone is welcome to eat with us. Maybe we will not have all the space to sit on the table, but we can take a plate of food and share together with the residents. Please.
So I just want to say that I completely agree with you, Yorgos, that of course what a place like City Plaza is showing and doing is nothing that has to do with humanitarianism. I think humanitarianism is should be thrown in a trash bin next to human rights, because it's the one thing that actually makes us think that this is a solution. When of course the whole debate, the whole structure should not look like there is a humanitarianism that is the answer to the oppressive migration regime. That is not to say that help should not be given to whatever the situation is, but it is to say that of course the solution will always be eventually a political one, not one that has to do with assistance, with help. And I think one way that you see it so working so well is like here at City Plaza. Let me just tell you that in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam, this group that I was mentioning, that is called We Are Here, is also a group that works very closely with the squatters. And there is a very old tradition of squatters in the Netherlands. And the nice thing is that they tell me, the old generation of squatters, they said that the movement was always dead, like in the early 2000s.
there were very few squatters left, like from the old generations of Dutch squatters. And it was actually through a coalition with refugees and migrants in the Netherlands that they feel now that the squatting